Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper, with my co-host, Kirsten Milliken. Kirsten, how are you tonight?
I'm doing quite well. Jeff, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing spectacular. It's a very, very, very busy time of the year. We've got some exciting stuff going on. Matter of fact, you've got some exciting news for us tonight. You are officially a graduated ADHD coach, right?
I am officially graduated. Yes, I am, in part thanks to you. So, yeah.
Well, congratulations. It's been fun. It's been, I don't know, part thanks to me. You were like just another part of my tuition and learning more and more about how to help those with ADHD. It's been kind of fun. And everybody, you know, Kirsten's kind of cool because she's been through coach training now, and she's graduated, but she's also a psychologist by side, so she's got kind of a foot in both places. So it's been great having you on the show, because you know we're coming up on a year, I think, since we've been working together on the show.
We are up on a year, yep, in just a few weeks. As a matter of fact, it was a couple of weeks after the ACO conference, which is coming up in 3 weeks. So.
Yeah, but the ACO conference last year was in March, so I gotta go back and do the math. But my gut is we started, our anniversary will be like while we're at the ACO conference, which is in what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks? 2 weeks.
2.5, somewhere around there, yep.
Yeah. Well, here, real quick,
you're usually
everybody.
The king. Doug, Jeff, I'm a little disappointed, I got to say, because you're usually the king of, like, on this date I interviewed this person about this. So you
the first Wednesday in April, what we did, it was going from wow to bored to gone, I think it was.
So we're like 2 weeks away.
Yeah. Yeah.
From our anniversary. Are you taking me out for drinks and to have a good time?
I'm sure I'll buy you a drink in Atlanta at the ACO conference. There's no question. Which I'll also be buying a drink for our guest, Dr. Jeffrey Katz. And so we need to move this along because as excited as I am for you, and I know the public is out there, they're really wanting to know about this motivational thing. So real quick, everybody, today is Wednesday, March the 20th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, year 2013. This is Attention Talk Radio. Our topic tonight is ADHD motivation, three approaches to changing behavior, and with us in our virtual studio is Dr. Jeffrey Katz. He's been with us once before and had an absolutely spectacular show that I still talk about today and some other things because it was very, very insightful. And the cool part about it was this is Attention Talk Radio. We pay attention to attention, and in the show that we did with him was focused on IEP and Section 125 plans and helping parents back in the late September, early October, and it was very, very, very insightful. So a few things as a reminder, everybody, Attention Talk Radio is a part of the Attention Talk Network, which includes Attention Talk Video and Attention Talk News. All of those you can access by going to those URLs. So it's attentiontalkvideo.com, attentiontalknews.com, and attentiontalkradio.com. The thing about Attention Talk News is you go to that site and you got to sign up because it's a subscription-based newsletter, and we report stuff that's going on with regard to the network, and we have guest contributors, we have guest videos, and all kinds of hoopla like that. As a reminder, don't forget to catch us on Facebook at facebook.com/attentiontalkradio. A couple big things out there. If you're listening and you've got a senior or you've got somebody who is in college, Shire is offering their scholarship program, and applications are due this March the 30th. The URL on that is www.shireadhdscholarship.com. So if you are interested in that, make sure that happens. Also, Chad's regional conference has been set. It's going to be in Dallas this year in early, I think it's May the 4th. They're a little slow in pulling that stuff together because of a lot of changes. But to learn more about that, go to chadd.org. Also, with Chad, they're very busy right now. They've got a lot of stuff going on. They're getting ready to launch their new website, which I'm pretty excited about. So stay tuned for that. And Kirsten, on earth, could I have missed any other announcements?
It's possible, but I can't think of any. And quite frankly, you moved on from me. I'm ready to move on from announcements and get to Dr. Katz.
Oh, well, one other thing real quick. I, again, I want to thank a new sponsor we have. That's the Edge Foundation. They've come on board with us and made some commitments to us, and we're real excited about some of the things that they're doing. Edge Foundation is a non-for-profit organization that helps provide coaching to those students in their college years and stuff like that. So just stay tuned. There's more about that. So with that being said, Kirsten, can you introduce our guest?
I can. Hold on. I got pieces of paper flying everywhere, unfortunately. Oh, my God. Can you believe it, Jeff? I got in my head. I got so excited about the fact that I graduated, and now I can't. Yeah, you got to have it in front of you, don't you?
You're going to make me do this?
No, I'm not going to make you do it. Here, I got it. I was just teasing.
Here we go.
I just like making you sweat a little bit. All right. So Dr. Jeffrey Katz is a clinical psychologist, and he practices in Hampton Roads, Virginia. He specializes in the assessment and treatment of ADHD, learning disabilities, and the behavioral difficulties of children and adolescents. He also advocates for his clients in the school system in regards to the rules and regulations around Section 504 and special education. He's on the board of directors for CHAD, and he's also the co-chair of the Public Policy Committee for CHAD. He is connected to a lot of different educational resources and also resources for people with ADHD. And tonight we're excited to have him here and talk about motivation, how to get people with ADHD motivated to make some changes, which I know can be a struggle, having been there myself. Welcome, Dr. Katz.
Hello. Thank you very much. I appreciate being back here. I enjoyed it the last time, and I'm looking forward to it tonight.
Right. I'm very excited about tonight because I'm anxious to learn more because last time we interviewed you, before we interviewed you, I learned in the interview, then I learned again, and tonight a lot of some stuff is coming off of a presentation that you gave in San Francisco.
Yes.
And I learned something then. I'm sure I'm going to learn something again. So when we talk about – before we get into this, I just want to put things into a context. Dr. Katz, to you, when we say motivation, what is motivation?
Oh, very good question. I would say we would like to think that motivation is the internal source of why we do what we do, you know, what makes us as people do what we do. And the idea of motivation is, from my point of view, is trying to figure out, so what does motivate people? What is going on either inside that person or in the environment that gets them to behave the way they do? And as a psychologist, that's what I'm looking at. We can talk about how people think and how they feel, but sometimes how they think and feel doesn't really match up with what they end up doing. So trying to really figure out how come somebody does something is important. And I work a lot with children and teenagers and some adults also. So in my practice, a lot of what I'm trying to do is to how do we help a youngster or even an adult who's having trouble being motivated to get themselves motivated, or for youngsters having maybe difficulty in school or at home, how can the adults around that youngster change things so that the child becomes more motivated than they can be. You know, one of the problems with ADD is, you know, people want to do really well. The problem is they can't always follow through with what they know to do, or the timing is wrong. So they're often very motivated, but they have trouble getting themselves to do what they know they need to do.
Is motivation... I have to think out loud on this because my question, what I wanted to ask was, is motivation easily recognizable? And before we got on, I referred to a keynote address at a CAD conference. I think it was back in Cleveland about this particular topic. So I think you know what I'm kind of driving at, Dr. Katz. But when we say motivation, I guess help me out with a question, because is it easily recognizable? Because I think motivation sometimes is people look at it and say, this should be motivation, but it's not.
Right. No, that happens all the time. Either people see somebody as being totally not motivated, like the kid never, you know, he's not motivated to do school. He's not motivated to do his chores. We can tell him that you can have $5 to do your chores, and he never does it. He's just not motivated. But no, it's not easy to tell. I mean, that takes sleuthing. That takes some detective work, because people are always doing something. So when I see a kid, and I saw a kid the other day who had gone after another kid, and to figure out what was motivating him as you know, just for him to say, well, I was angry with him. Yeah, but you get angry at other people when you don't go after them. What was it about this? You know, what was going on? What had happened before this had happened? Or, you know, how come you focused on this kid? So figuring out what motivates somebody or just guessing on it is not it. You really have to try and figure it out. And that's kind of why this talk that I put together for Chad, I thought, you know, what I liked about it was it's looking at behavior change and looking from three different approaches, kind of like a very basic behavioral approach to a more, the kind of approach they use in school called positive behavioral intervention and support, which looks more deeply at the whys, to kind of say, I say the final phase, which is collaborative problem solving from Ross Green, which is understanding where the kid's blocks are and how do you get a kid to come around to problem solve with you as opposed to getting to fights with you all the time about things. So I kind of use this as a way of looking at motivation, and you can use these kinds of approaches in different situations. For example, if I'm eating too much, I will use a very basic behavioral approach with myself to slow down on my eating. For example, I want to buy a television. I pay myself $3 a day. It goes into a jar if I don't have any snacks or dessert that day. Mm-hmm. If I have one, I get $2. And when I did this over for about a year and a half, maybe five times did I ever not earn money on that day. I'm very motivated by money. I'm also motivated by food,
uh-huh.
So it's hard not to eat, of course. But I was able to link earning money in that jar with buying a TV later, which I had really, really wanted. So it's a very basic behavioral motivation. It's very quite
yep.
clear what I'm doing with that.
You said something that was fascinating to me. Get a kid to come around, and all of a sudden I had a little bit of an insight. Because to me, when I was asking the question, motivation is not easily recognizable. I remember a
right.
speaker talk about a situation one time, and I'll bring that to myself. My son will text, like, nonstop. When I look at him, I'm like, why are you doing that? And he's doing it for a reason. He's motivated for a reason.
Right.
Not so, I could say he'd like to be the object of attention. I mean, I can speculate it all day long. But I know myself is that as the parent, he might be motivated to the text, but what I'm doing is I'm trying to get my son motivated to do something else. And so there's this thing that's
right.
kind of going on between what's naturally motivating him that as a parent I've caught myself resisting because I want him to be motivated to do something else. So there's something that is the natural motivation, and then how do I create the environment to shift so he's motivated in what I want him to be motivated in? And that's two different things, is it right?
Well, I would hope that they're not exclusive. For example, collaborative problem solving with Ross Green would say you have a concern about him doing his homework, you know, or his motivation for getting homework done. And I would try and get very behavioral, you know, not just, oh, I want him to have more motivation for what I want, but it's, no, you have to be real specific, take specific situation. I want him motivated to do his homework, or he's not doing enough homework. You need to do more homework. And you can say, my concern is that you're not going to do well in school, and I know you want to do well, and I'm concerned that later you'll realize that there's been a mistake made and, you know, your grades aren't where you want them. And then the question to ask him is, what's your concern? And he might say, well, I like talking to my friends, and we text all the time, and I'm concerned about, you know, spending, you know, 3 hours doing my homework and not being able to touch base with my friends.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So then you can say, so you're concerned about not keeping up with what's going on with your friends, and I'm concerned about getting homework done. What do you think we can do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what would be a good way to solve that problem? Well, right off the top, well, maybe the deal is that he works for 30 minutes, and then he gets a 10-minute break to check in with his friends.
Mm-hmm.
Then he can work another 30 and get another 10-minute break. So it's not one or the other. He gets some of what he wants, and you also get some of what you want. And he also knows that he gets that 10-minute break after he's done 30 minutes of work. So now he's more motivated to get that work done so he can have that 10 minutes off.
Kirsten, you've got kind of a foot in both places. As we stand right now, you got any questions or stuff? I mean, I've got some other stuff, but I just want to kind of check in with you on this.
Well, it's interesting. I'm thinking this is a perfect sponsor spot right now, but I have a 10-year-old son, and homework, he's got ADHD, and homework's an issue. And I have to say, he loves his time timer, so little plug there.
Right.
Yeah, but he knows, you know, he sets it for his 20 to 30 minutes, and then he knows he gets to play a video game or he gets to do something with me or whatever. And that's motivating to him, and it keeps him right on task. So, you know, having that incentive. And so that was one comment I wanted to make, no question there. But the other thing I was noticing, though, is, you know, as adults, we often have these big, long-term goals for our kids. You know,
right.
I want you to get good
right.
grades, which, you know, a
right.
semester. A quarter is a long time, and I want you to go to college, which is like this, you know, until you get to be a
uh-huh.
senior and you're applying for it is this thing that's way out there. And really the kids, typically when I'm working with them, and, you know, I don't know how it is for you, Dr. Katz, but we'll tell you about, like, their immediate goal, what they want
right,
right. now, and that's what you have, you know, where
yeah.
you have to negotiate from
yeah.
on their side.
I think parents sometimes make that mistake of, you know, if you get good grades, we're going to go to Disney World on spring break. Hey,
yeah.
and let me tell you, the kids are going to be excited because they want to go to Disney World.
But how long will they be excited for?
For about 2 weeks, if you're lucky, 2 weeks. Because that won't last. And the other part of it, getting good grades is pretty ephemeral. You know, what does that mean?
Yeah.
So I talk to parents very much about you have to make it a weekly or a daily thing. And it's not about getting good grades. I kind of go to, what do we know is likely to result in the youngster getting better grades? Well, if they study a little every night, they're more likely to get better grades. Well, good. Then let's reinforce and let's help the kid be motivated about studying every night for a little bit. Forget about the grades. It's what is the behavior that we want the kid to be doing that we see at will end up in the result that we want. But you're right. I mean, putting it way off of having a goal that's, like you say, oftentimes more than a day off, it's not going to be a goal that a kid is going to be able to maintain over a period of time.
Dr. Katz, I need to take a break and go to commercial. When we come back, though, I do want to give you a little bit of a forum to walk through the three different approaches because they build
sure.
on each other, because I think it would be helpful to kind of frame those out a little bit and then –
yeah.
and then come back and kind of apply those a little bit. So before we go to break, real quick, those that have any questions, really the best place to access you would be your website at Dr. Jeffrey Katz, KATZ.com. Is that still accurate?
Yes. Yeah, it's DrJeffreyKatz.com.
And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Hey. Hey, you.
Are you the parents of a child with ADHD? Does your child need successful task completion structures? We are Hey You, and we make routines fun and easy.
Time to rise, so open your eyes.
Go to heyyouadhd.com and download our task completion programs today.
Shake it out, shake it out, move our body around.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function impairment make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. This edition of Attention Talk Radio, we've got Dr. Jeffrey Katz in the house. We're talking about motivation. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about what is motivation and how easy is it to recognize and some stuff. But, Dr. Katz, I'd like to kind of give you like a little bit of a forum here or soapbox just to kind of walk through the fundamentals of these three different approaches to change behavior and then kind of open up to discussion. So if you could take a couple minutes and kind of not in overt detail, but just kind of frame out so everybody gets a sense of what that is, so they get an idea and we can kind of compare and trash and go from there, it'd be great.
Great. Thank you very much. Well, the first one is what I call just the conventional behavioral approach. This is the basic approach to changing behavior by managing positive and negative reinforcements. You know, so it's the basic, you know, you eat your dinner, you get to have dessert. You don't do this, you lose a privilege. But we use that all the time. What's interesting about this approach, when I was in college, I did a class on pigeon psychology. But it's basic behavior management. You can get a pigeon to do anything if you feed it food at the right time. And you can get it to dance, you can turn it around, as long as when the, you know, buzzer goes or the light comes on, the pigeon sees it and they get food for it. So you don't have to have a kid even understand. You can have a four-year-old who's having some issues, and you can target behaviors you want to change by reinforcing them at the right time. So that's a very basic behavioral approach, which can work very, very well. I mean, it can work with adults also if you're picking the right behavior and the right reinforcer. But that's very basic. The next part, the next level really, is this positive behavioral intervention and support. This is a much more formalized approach that is used by school systems, or I should say should be used by school systems. It's much more focused on the environmental variables that reinforce problem behavior. So this comes about when a kid is having a pattern of difficult behaviors in the school setting. And what once that's identified, that this is what's going on, what they want to do is what's called a functional behavioral analysis, which is to analyze what's the function of that behavior. And just like you were saying before about motivation, another word really could be function. It's what's the function of that behavior. But there are things that you want to look at. What is the setting? Where does the behavior, the problem behavior, take place? Is it in the classroom? Is it on the recess grounds? Is it in the lunchroom? So that might tell you something about structure, lack of structure. You want to look at the task or activity that the child is engaged in. Many times for kids with ADD, the issue becomes writing. Writing's a big issue. And oftentimes you'll see kids are having problems in the classroom, and you realize that, oh, it's time for writing. They're not feeling good about this. It's probably better for them. They feel that it's probably better to act up than to kind of look stupid. You might also look to see what specific triggers are going on. So let's say writing is coming up, the kid has writing in the afternoon when the medications are wearing off, that could be a trigger. Or they're seated in a group where they have some kids who tend to write very well. So that might be a trigger. You might look at time of day, the individuals who are involved, there's a particular teachers, particular kids who are around when there's a problem behavior. And you're also looking for the consequences of the behavior. And what is it possibly that's reinforcing that kid? If they act up, then they get removed from the classroom. We may think, oh, you know, this kid is not motivated for schoolwork or doesn't have motivation, but they've just motivated themselves out of the classroom because they can't deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So from that functional, but yes?
I was agreeing with you. Keep going.
So from that functional behavioral analysis, you make up a hypothesis about why the child is behaving the way they're behaving. You know, that we think that this child is having behavioral problems actually because of academic difficulties that they're having in the classroom, particularly when it comes to writing or math, and that the function of the behavior is that they're avoided. So once you have that hypothesis, then they put together a behavior intervention plan. So it's you design this plan based on what we know from the functional behavioral analysis as an effort to alter the youngster's behavior. Now, it's interesting. This plan is not about what the child is supposed to do. It's not about, well, Joey should do this or Joey should do that. It's about what the teacher should do to support the kid. So mm-hmm. if we believe that this is what's happening with the kid, he's acting up during writing, well, one thing is that we don't get him into a situation where he's going to be compared to other kids. He may need some learning, so he may need some extra help with writing. It may be that we make sure that writing takes place in the morning when the medications are really working well for him. We may have a plan for when there is writing and he starts to go into a crisis, how do we help him instead of getting on his case about, you know, you're acting up and we're going to send you to the office and, you know, now you're in trouble. We say, if he's starting to act up, he's getting anxious, he's worried about the writing, you know what, it's not important right now. Let's let him do some artwork, or let's let him do some reading, and we'll come back to the writing at another time. So it's also about what do we do to so that the kid is not having a meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the PBIS. The other one is collaborative problem solving. And it kind of takes off, actually, right from that spot I was just saying. In collaborative problem solving, the understanding is that children can have different difficulties in what they call lagging skills. They lag. Could be the executive functioning skills, language processing skill problems, emotional regulation, cognitive flexibility, being able to kind of switch gears when they need to. It could be social skills. So when you have a youngster who's having problems at home or at school, maybe we'll talk about home because it's usually parents who do this. We're also looking, similar to the functional behavioral analysis, as to who's involved, what's happened, when it happened, and where it's happened. And what we want to do is to understand, like I was saying before, that word concern. What are you concerned about? You have to take the position that if the kid is having a problem, there's a reason for it. The kids want to do well. They want to please their parents and please their teachers. So if the kid is not doing well, there's a problem. So we have to kind of take that mindset, and we have to approach the kid with when they're in a good mood, when everybody's in good mood. I usually say when you know, ice cream and cake, chocolate, even better. Hey, you know, I've noticed that in the afternoons when it's time for homework, you know, it seems like you get upset, you know, you get upset and you're screaming and yelling and you go into the ruckus, what's going on? And you have to listen to the kid, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm missing my friends, it's too much work, I'll never get it all done. And you have to be able to invite the kid to say, you know, I understand, it is very difficult. I'm concerned about us getting the work done that we need to get done. What do you think we can do? What might work to make it a little bit better? One thing about, I'm sorry?
Go ahead and
yeah.
finish, and then I have a question.
Okay.
So
kind of three basic things about the collaborative problem solving is you've got to convey your empathy to the youngster and your understanding. You have to define very closely what the problem is, right? That it's about homework. It's not about that if you don't learn to do your homework, you'll never make it anywhere in your life. No, it's about homework. And then you have to invite the youngster to join you in some brainstorming to see what will work. Maybe you'll find out the kid's idea works, great. Maybe it doesn't, but that's good because you're in a problem-solving mode at that point, you know. Well, you know, we've tried this for a week. I'm not sure it's working so well. What do you think? Right. We forgot about your favorite show comes on at that time. What do you think might work better? How can we change this? So that's, to me, the best approach, because it's really helping the youngster to learn how to problem solve. It's really improving your relationship with your child and helping to really find ways that are motivating for the child, things that help that are motivating so that they can get done the things they need to get done, even though they're not that exciting, and also feel good about themselves and feel good about how life is treating them.
Now, Dr. Katz, so
yes.
I think that you and I have spoken about this before because I worked as the lead psychologist for our local school department, which was an interesting experience. And ironically, without even thinking about what we were talking about tonight, I was cleaning out paperwork this week and came across all of the functional behavior assessment protocols that I developed for our school system. And one of the reasons that I redid them was because we were leaving the kids out of the process.
Yes.
Hearing you say, like, at home, this collaborative problem-solving process is ideal. And I think you even maybe alluded to it when you were talking about the functional behavior assessment of the FBA. But, you know, schools don't always do the ideal thing. But, I mean, do you encourage them to include the kids in those plans? Because
absolutely, yes. I didn't make that clear. They often do not. More often than not, they don't. They're doing it to the child. And I very much advocate and say, I was at a meeting at a middle school last week. I said, you've got to include the child in this process. I mean, if you want to know, you know, why he's doing what he's doing, you need to talk to the child. My only concern is that a lot of times the school personnel really are not familiar. They think they're doing a good functional behavioral analysis, but they're continuing to point fingers at the child.
Right.
And to really get a child to talk,
you have to motivate.
So, no, I definitely agree with you. As much as you can, you always want to involve the child in the process.
I thank you both, because great opportunity here, because I'm learning something here. When you engage the child in this process, how does that work in the mental health world? And I, forgive me for those terms, because I'm not a mental health professional. I'm a coach, and I'm having a couple ahas right now. So forgive my vernacular, but I'm just like, how would you engage them?
Well, the first thing is I say to the kid, you're not in trouble. You're not in here because you're in trouble. You're here because your parents have some concerns. The other thing is I never ask why. Why is very judgmental. Why did you do that? Oh, I don't know. I always ask what. What happened? Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. What happened before that? What happened after that? Oh, and what happened then? Kids respond to what? They can respond to. And then you learn what that whole chain is. So one way you get that kids respond, you tell them they're not in trouble. You're trying to figure out what happened. Because if we can figure out what happened, then maybe we can figure out what we can do so things are working better. So that's, to me, how you engage your child. They need to see you as somebody who's being very, very supportive and who also accepts what they say. Right? So I don't get into I don't generally get into discussions with kids about whether they're right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
In their minds, they're right. And if I can't get into their head and get into the way they see it, I can never help that child to change. You know, I have to go from their perspective, because once I'm in their perspective and they know that I understand where they're coming from, then I can start, you know, gently pushing things over a little bit or presenting different ideas to them that they're much more likely to take in and consider because I'm starting from their perspective.
Wow. Dr. Katz, you pointed out earlier that one of the big points in Ross Green's work is that you have to have empathy for the person that you're speaking to. And I can't tell you how many times I have that conversation with parents when they're talking about behavior that is not appropriate or it's not wanted or whatever. And they say, you know, empathy, really? You know, how could I possibly empathize when my child just blah, 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 blah? And, you know, and I want to ask you that question, but I also want to point out that, you know, when you can do that, that is like almost any kid wants. of the time. If you can get that far, like, you've just hit a home run, and they will just totally eat it up after that. So, but
well,
can you talk to, like, how would you empathize
yeah.
when your kid just did, like, some horrific thing?
Well, one thing is you have to take the disability perspective. I mean, you were talking about kids with ADD. Disabilities, they're not operating the way they want to operate. They're frustrated like us. And that's often one of the things you say to the parents. You're frustrated. How do you think he feels, right? Not that, you know, your feelings don't count, but he's equally as frustrated. This is not what he wants either. And, you know, you often see that actually when a kid first starts medication, all that, quote, oppositional behavior, all of a sudden it's not quite happening. Well, if the kid was really that bad, the medication, they would be badder. They'd be more focused on being bad. But usually what you see is that the kid is doing better. So you say, look, the kid always wanted to do better. They just couldn't pull it together to do it. So part of that empathy is this: you have to get back to that disability perspective, and also that the child is not doing this to you. You know, if the child is screaming and yelling at you, it's really because they're frustrated about this situation over here or about school or whatever started the whole thing, but they don't know what else to do. The other thing I say to parents is that, you know, we can think well about this from the adult perspective, but the kid is just not there. The kid just doesn't understand it, all the ins and outs of what we're concerned about, because they're the kid. They just don't have any idea of what we're talking about. I often say that in front of the kids, you know, not to be mean to them. I'll say, you know, I'm trying to say how a situation, but the kids just don't understand it like
One of the things that I've been involved in scouts heavily over the years, and I can't tell you how many times I'd walk up to an adult and say, you're talking to a 13-year-old brain. Come on. You're looking at them as if they got a 44-year-old brain, and they don't. I mean, they got a 13-year-old brain.
Like they should
brain.
Understand you somehow.
Yeah, like they should have a college degree, their MBA, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I need to go to a commercial break again real quick. And come back, I got to tell you, my head is swirling right now and anxious to learn because there's I got my coaching hat on right now. I'm listening to you guys. So here, let's go to break real quickly. Everybody,
sure.
If you want to learn more about Dr. Katz, go to his website at www.drjeffreykatz.com. And also, I pulled this up. We had a great interview with him last October the 3rd in the year 2012 on when your IEP and Section 504 plans aren't working. If you're identifying with us, go back and listen to it. It was a brilliant show. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages. There we go.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
You can't go off to school with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to ADDCA.com and click on Find a Coach.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're having a great conversation with Dr. Jeffrey Katz on motivation and behavioral changes. Oh, my God, there's so much to say here. Before the break, Dr. Katz walked through three different, levels of this. One was the conventional behavior management, which is a positive and negative reinforcement. The second was positive behavioral intervention, which took a look at functional behavior analysis. And what I took from that, Dr. Katz, was you take a look at the environment, the task, the consequences and stuff, which to me is very much I'm going to generalize, but it's very much the environment. You take a look at the variables and how you can adjust the variables to adjust the environment for the person with ADHD to thrive in that. And then the last one is the collaborative problem-solving process, where you begin to engage where you begin to engage the person to negotiate the behavior. Am I misrepresenting that? Close.
I don't know that it's in some ways it's negotiating the behavior, but it's trying to understand what the child's concerned about, how come they're doing what they're doing, or what their concerns are about doing what you want them to do. And you're expressing your concerns, and then you're working it out. How can you be satisfied, and how can they be satisfied also? So it's at that level of, what's motivating you, what's going to help you, and what's motivating me, and what's going to, what would help me to get to where I need to be. But I know you wanted to talk about coaching. How does coaching fit in?
Well,
how do you motivate people?
Everybody out there, I took psychology 101 in college 3 semesters in a row. So I'm working on psychology 102. So this is, like, fascinating to me. And Kirsten, you said something, learning, I forgot what you said, but you brought up, Dr. Katz, including the kids in the process. And that triggered something to me, because I do think that when I listen to mental health, there's this side, but then it gets tough. It's the how part, like, how do you actually do this? And what you're describing here is great, but engaging the kids is the how part. And when I was listening to you as a coach, when I'm coaching adults on motivation, what I basically do is I talk to them about, what works for you, how does talking out, if you babble, how does that serve you? They might be motivated to do that. I say, well, how is it serving you? Are you thinking out loud? Are you organizing your thoughts? Are you bouncing ideas off of somebody else? Or are you kind of exchanging data? Because I'm looking at the function of some of that stuff, because usually they're motivated to talk, and I'm curious as to what it does for them. And if I can identify an isolated, you're organizing your thoughts, that's what it does for you, you're motivated by that, so maybe if I need you to get you to do your taxes, you need to verbally process with somebody else because it's stimulating you to verbally process, because that's how I'm kind of going on, but I watch their behavior to see what stimulates their brain in terms of what they naturally are motivated to do, and then adjust their environment, which goes back to the second level. Now, what's fascinating to me is in coaching, and everybody out there just know that Dr. White is a coach, so he has some influence in this, but what's interesting is one of the things in coaching is you meet people where they are, and when you say when you guys were talking about empathy for the kid, and more importantly, Dr. Katz, I think you said the way they see it. It's almost
– right.
My language is not – it's almost like you're crawling in their brain and forgetting everything and say, I want to learn how you think. I want to learn – I want to understand how you connect this and mind works, which is the empathy, because if you can kind of go over them and be with them and share that moment and meet them where they are and understand them, and then it's almost like you kind of connect with them, because it's so much about trust, and then you kind of help translate the world back to the other side, because it's almost like, for lack of better terms, their brain is wired that speaks, Spanish for all I know, and you speak Spanish, and then you kind of relate that back to English and guide them through that process. They trust you, and then you kind of, in that process, goes back to the second level where you're adjusting the environment based off of how they work. To me, how coaching kind of comes in.
You're helping them to communicate also, because the kids with ADD, very impulsive, they don't regulate themselves well. So you're also helping them to understand that when they do something this way, they seem to get this response all the time. Oh, you don't want to be sent to your room. you want to be able to watch TV. I gotcha. Sometimes I'll say, you know, unfortunately, your parents are crazy. They seem to have this idea that when you scream and yell, they should send you to your room. But you don't want to go to your room. But if we know that screaming and yelling is always going to get you sent to your room, I wonder if there's another way to do this. How can you let them know how you feel, but not get sent to your room?
Forgive me. I'm going to change directions here a little bit because I had an exercise this afternoon. I was coaching a high school kid, and I was engaging the parents, talking to them about observing me and the kid where they were, and trying to almost be a scientist and say, you know, how does he do it? And we came on the notion that, you know, Dad was upset because when he studies, he's moving all over the place. It was kind of cool because Dad, as we started working with the child said, well, that helps me focus. And we started talking about what, you know, observing him, well, you know, I mess with this and this and that, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, fidgets and stuff like that. And through that conversation, it was funny because the kid began to disclose to us that, yeah, it was moving, but it wasn't just any kind of moving. And where we got with the hypothesis is he likes to tear things apart and put it together. So, like, if he had putty, he'd rip it apart, or if he had a paperclip, he'd tear it. A squeezy thing wouldn't do it for him, but whatever. But it was interesting because he became engaged in the conversation because he lit up. And he said, yeah, I can focus if I'm moving, and particularly if I've got something in my hands, but I got to be able to split it like erasers. I break them apart. And the notion of meeting them where they are to say and help them understand what is it for them, because you could hear this kid's cadence and his voice pick up and get excited about it, because when you're a coach, you listen to those things, because if they get excited, their voice tempo starts to go up. You're something there, and if they get really heavy and down, you're going to a negative place. And he started to pick it up. He started getting excited about it, and he started recognizing those clues. And that goes back to meeting them where they are and saying, hey, this works for you. Let's bring that back into the environment, which goes back again to your second level. And it was funny because I felt like we got to the third level of the collaborative problem solving. We got to, okay, the next time you study – what are we going to do to bring, you know, that tactical ripping things apart into the study environment that would make it easier for you to do that? And forgive me, everybody, I'm all over the place right now because it's a little bit of emotional because it was just I'm processing, but just I'm having fun here because there's this connection between what you've described to us and what Kirsten brought out is meeting, involving the kids in the process, but meeting with them where they are and saying, hey, they can actually help you. So I'll be quiet and let you guys, like, comment.
Well, I think that you are, as a coach, then you're able to convey to the youngster that you appreciate their style and that there's nothing wrong with their style, right? And you're mm-hmm. looking to see how it helps them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you sometimes find out it doesn't really help them?
Well,
do you think it helps them, but it doesn't?
In my world, what's funny is we go, okay, I want you to run an experiment. This week I want you to observe five times where you willfully bring that stuff in and observe yourself and what happens. And if they come back a week later and they didn't do it, then I go, well, there's an obstacle in the way. What got in the way? Or maybe
uh-huh.
that's not the right thing. Or they could come back and say, hey, I did it. It worked three times for math, history, and science. Math, science. Let's just say math and science and physics, but it didn't work for English and history. Then I go, oh,
uh-huh.
what's the difference there? Because if it worked for those three, that's great, but there's a difference between those subject matters. Well, what worked for you there? Because what worked for you in those environments might work in a different environment. Again, forgive me, goes back to the level two that you were talking about because
right.
you're taking a look at the environment because
right.
the nature of the thinking process in English is very different from math and science, so their structure might be different in those two, which goes back to engaging the kid in the process to help them discover what works for them.
Right. So the kid learns something about the technique they're using and how it works best, where it doesn't work as well. Yeah, it's the same thing. Maybe with me being a psychologist, parents are bringing in kids who are having difficulties,
uh-huh.
and maybe one thing you have is hopefully you have a teenager who's motivated to really get this stuff figure it out and to find a way to do well in spite of their ADD.
Well, actually, what I was also hearing, though, was that you had parents who were pointing out that his fidgeting was a negative behavior. And, in fact, what you learned in conversation with this kid was that this was actually a coping skill that he had, and I don't know how that affected his parents hearing that, and how and then how they perceived it or were willing to work with him around that.
Kirsten, that's a great point. It was negative in their mind, but I was observing the kid's natural behavior and said this allows him to focus. And as we pointed it out, the parents actually turned around. Oh, I guess it was. It's maybe difficult for us in that environment, but it kind of worked for him. But Dr. Katz, one of the other things that's interesting to me is that so often people will call me up and they'll say, "And I have a problem with time management, organization, kind of whatever." And Kirsten, I, you know what's coming is my.
It's been a while, Jeff.
One of my favorites is when adults come to me and say, "I want coaching on time management." I say, I put them off for a week as best I can. And I say, you know, next week when I ask you what you want coaching, I say time management organization. So a week later goes by. It's a 2 o'clock appointment. They call me at 2:03, and I say, what do you want coaching on time management? I go, oh, my God, amazing. Look at the progress. I go off the charts. I'm like, confident. How are we going to celebrate and blah, blah, blah. And then they go, what are you talking about? I go, well, you made this appointment on time. And I go, how'd you do it? And that's the question, is most times they don't.
Right.
And the idea is to begin to take a look at, like, in this particular situation of the child, is that you notice that when you were doing this, you were able to focus. I mean, I'm working backwards. What enabled you to focus in this situation as opposed to not, which goes back to what Kirsten's question, is involving the child, because, and forgive me here, but there's this metacognition thing out there that is thinking about what you're thinking, but only Jeffrey Katz can observe what he's paying attention to. And if you engage the child, they're witness to that, and they can actually give you that information as opposed to you have to do it like this. He says, no, I do well if I'm fidgeting, ripping things apart, and you're meeting the kid where they are, and you're changing the environment, which is making the motivational issue easier to get to where they want to go. And it's weird because, in a weird kind of way, that's where we come in as coaches, I think, is we kind of try to meet them where they are and work backwards. You're coming from the other side. What was interesting to me in the interview that we did with you back October was the integration of the kids. So you're doing it maybe not the way, not the level we're doing it, but we don't do the other side. But it what's fascinating to me is I talked to the experts is how weird that it all fits together in a piece. Maybe everybody's not got it all together, but What's kind of cool to me is the key insight for me tonight was what Kirsten said, is you meet the kid where they are to do this bridge, which is what you're saying, Dr. Katz, what makes this all happen.
So what's the other side? See, that's what I miss. So because I see what I try and do. So the other side is the coaching picks it up and says, okay, how are we going to use this to –
Well, what coaching says is when were you motivated, what enabled you to do it? And if a kid said, what enabled me to do it was, you have to ask a lot of questions, is, you know, I was moving and I was fidgeting, and this kid, I have to be careful because I don't want to, I mean, it's confidential, but he said, well, I did this. And I said, oh, that's, when he said we did this, and he started mirroring a couple other times, and I said, oh, and he said, a squeeze ball doesn't work for me, but ripping things apart does. He said eraser and putty and paper clips. Then I go, oh, okay, that's what works for you. Now let's bring this over to the study environment. And it made it easier for him motivated because he's saying, this is what works for me, Mom and Dad. And Mom and Dad were like, oh, they were resistant because they didn't see it.
So maybe as the therapist, what in the things that I talk about with behavior management, I'm thinking maybe it's when things are out of control, it's how to get things to a point that things are in control, that one can then start looking at those things and working that way. Because I generally parents are getting coming in or kids having problems at school, something's not in control, and so it's hard to I think maybe had that conversation you're talking about until the kid knows that you're behind them, the kid trusts you, that you've done some work to settle, really to stabilize things. Now once things are stabilized, now we can kind of go forward and start working through some of this stuff. Because I think a lot of, too, what you were doing was educating the parents. And I end up educating the parents a lot about what ADD is and how it affects the youngster and where the expectations fit or don't fit, or when the youngster's having trouble meeting an expectation, and that's why you're having things fall apart again. Well, like Kirsten, you said before, I think it's about, you know, or consistency. You know,
right.
you know, if you're going to do it, you got to keep at it because this is what the youngster needs. Don't let go of it. You know, if he's falling apart, you better get back to what you're doing before that was working. So I don't know if that's part of it, is as a therapist, is trying to get things stabilized and get things moving as a family, because if I do a good job, hopefully they're not going to see me forever. They'll be
yep.
able to do it on their own.
Dr. Katz, I do work on both sides. I work in the juvenile system, and then I also do coaching with kids
uh-huh.
and adults motivated, and it is very different. And, I can absolutely see what you're saying. So, you know, if you're going to a therapist, you are often trying to create a system around the client that's going to support them to get to a place of stability where
yeah.
they feel like they can count on people, they feel like people are understanding and listening to them, the rules have been set, the boundaries are clear, they know what's going to be, you know, acceptable and not acceptable, what the incentives and consequences are, all those. And so when their environment and they become stable and then people start having higher expectations of them in a way where they're believing in them, then the kid is oftentimes ready to go into coaching and to start
uh-huh.
that connection with a coach and be motivated for themselves to do better.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I could see that.
Sense?
And I think you all as coaches probably have a lot more things in your quiver to pull out in terms of attacking specific problems. I can do some of that. But, you know, there's certainly times when it comes to organizational systems, you know, I've got the five that I can come up with. But my guess is that you all probably do a pretty good job of, like, what you're saying is kind of maybe spotting some of their things that they're doing or a way of looking at it that you can pull out a lot
I
more,
tell you
have some
I
more
think,
to bring.
Dr. Katz, I think you'd be a great coach. Because here's the thing is what stands out to me is in the kids in the bringing the kids into the process. As a coach, I can tell you I'm working with a guy right now that I'm trying to meet him where he is. And what's been really cool, really, really cool, I mean, I've learned something, is this guy organizes by decision trees.
Uh-huh.
Imagine my documents, right? You
yeah.
go and you open my documents – you can't have too many folders because it's clutter. So there's a finite number of, like, let's say 5 or 6, and he's presented with a decision. Are you looking for something at home, at work, or da-da-da-da? He says, well, at home. Then he clicks on that folder, and he's presented with another set of decisions. And what's funny is he works his way through that stuff, and he can find things. Now, things that he uses all the time that might be 20 decisions down, he has a shortcut for. But what's fascinating is you meet them where they are, and you listen to them, and you try to help, like, kind of empathize with them and understand how they're thinking and then help them reveal it. And then when you can help them define their natural way of doing it, then you come out and you say, how would you build a system around how your brain works? Which is fascinating. It's frustrating sometimes, but it's a lot of fun. But it's meeting them where they are and then working your direction. But you individually starting where you are, you're coming at in this the brilliance of Kirsten's question was involving the kids, at least in this motivational thing, which to me is where it is. That's the epicenter. That's where the tire meets the road. You can't just say do this and be motivated. You got to meet the kids where they are, and you got to marry those two and bring it together to marry the environment to make it work. And
well, it just that's also, but even with younger kids, when I worked in a psychiatric hospital years ago, we had a kid who came in who was very withdrawn, and he wanted to come out and be out with the other kids, and he'd wear his coat all the time. He wanted to be in his room all the time.
Uh-huh.
And we were debating, well, how do we get him out into with the other kids and on socializing? And so I came up with the great idea of, well, if he wants to be in his room so much, let's tell him that the more time he spends out with the other kids, the more time he can be in his room. And they were like, well, no, we don't want him in his room. I said, no, I know that. But that's what he does a lot of. He wants to be in his room. So let's make that the reward. And that's what we did. And pretty soon, he was spending more time out with the other kids. And pretty soon, that became rewarding because he found that, you know what, he could get along with the other kids. They liked him. And he didn't want to spend as much time in his room. But sometimes that starting out where the kid is at is really looking closely to see, well, what are they doing a lot of? That's going to be the thing that's motivating.
And that's coach-like, because you're going there and saying, what is it about this kid that's motivating? You're saying, hey, blah, blah, blah. That's the brilliance. I have to go back and listen to this a couple times because it's weird, because I think we're talking about the same thing in different languages that are kind of coming together, which is the brilliance of all this, because I have to tell you, the greatest thing about being the host of Attention Talk Radio is the education I'm getting. It's amazing to me how much everybody's coming together. So we're using different languages a little bit, but so much of everybody's paying attention to fundamentally the same thing. And the crux of it is you can go through what you talked about, the systems, but the bottom line is engaging the kids in that process. It's not going to work unless you do that. So it's a give and take. So,
right. That's
Patrick,
right.
I am running out of time, so I have to kind of wrap some stuff up. I can't tell you how much I appreciate coming on the show today. And a reminder to everybody out there, Dr. Katz, the show that we did with him back in October was brilliant. In October, I believe it was 3rd. To learn more about him, go to drjeffreykatz.com. And with that, Dr. Katz, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you all so much. It's a great conversation. I appreciate it.
And,
I enjoyed having this conversation with you, Dr. Katz. Thank you very much for being here tonight. And have a great night.
And with that, everybody, come back next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.